Welcome back to Abu Ali's podcast. Today is October 7th, 2025, a date that for many marks a somber anniversary, and for others, a day of defiant commemoration. We're looking at a flurry of messages from Abu Ali Express, reflecting the complex and often contradictory global reactions to the ongoing situation. Joining me, as always, is our expert analyst. Thank you for being here.
It's good to be here. Indeed, October 7th has become a date laden with immense significance, and the messages we're seeing truly highlight the deep divisions and differing narratives playing out globally.
Gagrex? Absolutely. Let's start right there. We're seeing Hamas's official channels celebrating the blessed October 7th Al-Aqsa flood war, even sharing difficult-to-watch videos. And strikingly, we have Republican Congressman Randy Fine reporting that Muslims in New York are planning to celebrate the same event. What's your take on these commemorations, particularly on foreign soil?
It's deeply troubling, to say the least. The glorification of an event that involved such horrific acts of violence against civilians is a stark reminder of the ideological chasm that exists. When you see celebrations planned in places like New York City, it speaks to a deliberate attempt to normalize or even praise actions that most of the world condemns as terrorism. This isn't just about showing solidarity, it's about actively reinterpreting and legitimizing the events of that day in a way that is profoundly disturbing.
And yet, on the other side of the world, we have a very different picture. In Queensland, Australia, Christian Maoris are performing a haka to mark October 7th, raising Israeli flags and tearing Palestinian ones. And German Chancellor Friedrich Merz, marking the two-year anniversary, stated anti-Semitism in Germany is shameful, now and always. Let us stand by the Jewish people in our country. Today, on the second anniversary of Hamas's brutal attack on Israel, and every other day, it seems the global response is anything but monolithic.
Precisely. You have these very strong, diametrically opposed expressions of support and condemnation. The German Chancellor's statement is particularly powerful given Germany's historical context, emphasizing an unwavering stance against anti-Semitism and in solidarity with Israel. The Maori haka is another powerful cultural expression, signaling a specific community's alignment. These events underscore that while some seek to celebrate, many others are actively mourning and condemning the events of that day and standing with Israel.
Gagrex, shifting gears slightly to the ground in Gaza, Abu Ali Express reports that the IDF is detonating booby-trapped robots in Gaza City's Sabra and Nasser neighborhoods, and there was one rocket fired towards Nativ Ha'asara this morning with no casualties. Palestinian sources also mention IDF attacks near universities, though with a relative decrease in overall strikes today. What does this tell us about the current operational tempo?
It suggests a continued, albeit perhaps more localized, military presence and activity within Gaza. The booby-trapped robots indicate ongoing efforts to clear threats and infrastructure, even in more urban areas. The rocket fire, while seemingly isolated, is a reminder that the threat, though diminished, is not entirely eliminated. The mention of a relative decrease in attacks could point to a shift in strategy, or perhaps the impact of ongoing diplomatic efforts, which we'll get to.
Speaking of diplomacy, President Trump has been quite vocal about a potential deal with Hamas, stating he has red lines, but Hamas agreed to very important things. We're moving forward. However, he also denied a report that he called Netanyahu always so negative regarding the deal. What do we know about this Trump plan and the current state of negotiations in Sharm el-Sheikh?
The Trump plan appears to be the primary framework currently being discussed. According to the Qatari Foreign Ministry, all parties agree on the plan's outline, but the obstacles are in implementation. Critically, Trump's plan links the release of hostages directly to the end of the war. However, Hamas's position, as expressed by their spokesperson Fawzi Barhoum, is that they seek an agreement that brings the full withdrawal of the occupation forces from the Gaza Strip. And Khalil al-Haya, Hamas's negotiation head, explicitly stated that release of last prisoners must be timed with the last phase of withdrawal.
That sounds like a significant point of contention. Trump's plan implies hostage release before a full Israeli withdrawal, while Hamas is linking them directly, demanding international guarantees for a complete end to the war and full withdrawal.
Al-Jiba, it is indeed a major sticking point. Trump's maps reportedly define a yellow line beyond which Israel would withdraw, but only after all hostages are released. Hamas, however, is demanding a phased withdrawal tied to prisoner release, with the final release coinciding with the final withdrawal, and they want ironclad international guarantees. This shows a fundamental difference in how each side envisions the end state and the sequencing of events. The fact that Turkish and Qatari delegations, along with U.S. envoys like Jared Kushner, are joining the talks in Sharm el-Sheikh highlights the high-level international engagement trying to bridge this gap.
We also saw a poll where 62% of over 43,000 voters don't think Trump's 20-point deal will happen. That's a lot of pessimism.
It reflects the deep skepticism among the public, likely fueled by past failed negotiations and the complexity of the current demands. Despite the diplomatic activity, people remain cautious, which is understandable, given the history of the conflict and the entrenched positions of the parties involved.
Let's turn to the Gaza flotilla. 9 ships are currently about 360 kilometers off the Gaza coast. This mission has drawn some strong reactions, including from former President Trump, who called Greta Thunberg, a participant, a troublemaker with anger management problems. Greta, in turn, offered some pointed advice back to Trump. And another participant, Yasmin Attar, who was deported twice, has vowed, "We will return again with a larger army." This is clearly an escalating situation.
It is. The flotilla represents a persistent non-state actor challenge to the blockade, often drawing significant media attention and generating controversy. Yasmin Attar's statements are particularly inflammatory, talking about being tortured and abducted in international waters, while also explicitly vowing to return with a larger army. This rhetoric is designed to escalate tensions and paint a narrative of victimhood and resistance, regardless of the realities of international maritime law or the security concerns of the involved nations. And the exchange between Trump and Thunberg, while somewhat theatrical, also highlights how these events become part of a larger global political discourse.
Gakrux, moving to regional security, we've seen reports of Israeli strikes in southern Lebanon, with Lebanese channels confirming casualties, including a Hezbollah-affiliated commander. Simultaneously, the IDF has intercepted 4 Houthi drones in the Eilat area, with some interceptor remains falling in Jordan. This suggests the conflict isn't confined to Gaza.
Al-Jiba, far from it. These reports confirm that the conflict remains multi-front and highly volatile. The strikes in Lebanon indicate continued Israeli operations against Hezbollah assets, and the Houthi drone attacks on Eilat show a persistent threat from Yemen, demonstrating the broader regional implications and the involvement of Iran-backed proxies. The fact that interceptor debris fell in Jordan also underscores the geographical spread of these engagements and the potential for unintended regional spillover.
Gakrux, before we wrap up, a couple of other interesting points. German Chancellor Merz has also declared that if Israel is prevented from participating in Eurovision, Germany should boycott it, calling it a scandal. And in Nairobi, Kenya, there was a demonstration in support of Israel. These seem like strong statements of support from unexpected corners.
They are, and they again illustrate the diverse global allegiances in this conflict. Germany's stance on Eurovision is a powerful cultural and political statement, reinforcing their commitment to Israel's right to participate on international stages. And the demonstration in Kenya highlights that support for Israel isn't limited to Western nations, but extends to various parts of Africa, often driven by different historical, religious, and geopolitical factors.
It's certainly a lot to unpack, and the messages from Abu Ali Express give us a very raw, real-time look at these events. Thank you for your insights, expert analyst.
My pleasure. The situation remains incredibly dynamic, and these reports are crucial for understanding the evolving narratives and realities on the ground.
Indeed. And that brings us to the end of another episode of Abu Ali's podcast. From the complex commemorations of October 7th to the tense diplomatic negotiations and the ongoing regional conflicts, it's clear the world continues to grapple with these profound events. We'll be back soon with more updates. Until then, stay informed.